tip.
Good afternoon. It is April 1st, 2024. You're listening to A Little Column A, Little Column B, hosted by Will Limonos and co-hosted by Zach Bishop. How are you doing today, buddy?
What's going on, Will? I think we got to jump right into it. The biggest news from the sports weekend. Everybody wants to hear about it. It's that the Yankees went down to Houston and won four games in a row from the Houston Astros. I guess they didn't have their garbage cans with them. And now I got to ask you, do you think that now that the Yankees undefeated for the season, do you think they're going to lose a game like this whole year? World Series favorites, right?
I think that there's this inside joke that you have with the listeners that every podcast you're going to open up with baseball as if there's actual content to come from this show for it. Like, we have no, I have no baseball takes. The season didn't even start in this country. Why would I care? You know, I'm sure. I wish them the best of luck, but I'm too busy watching the Red Sox struggle like they're a tag sales team over here. Just can't spend the money. We don't make anything over here. So sure.
I took it very seriously last week, and I found out how I could listen to it on the radio. Because the first game started in the afternoon, which is unusual for baseball, and the Yankees went down 4-0. And I texted one of our award-winning listeners, Sean, and said, baseball is canceled. It's over. But then the Yankees came back, and they won that game. And, yeah, swept the Astros. Very unexpected. Not only did they sweep them on the road in four games, not three. So, yeah, really looking for any reason to not have to talk about the Duke season ending. So that's why I opened with baseball today.
All right, well, then we're going to talk about NC State's continuation of the ACC dominance.
This team is magic.
Is that the only definition we have? I mean, I was.
Can you think of any other reason, like any other possibility? It doesn't make any sense. This team didn't have flashes during the year that you would have thought, ooh, well, this team, all right, yeah, there's really something here. I don't think they were ever ranked in the top 25. The coach was about to be fired at the end of the year. 4 weeks ago, it was on a Monday. I remember it was on a Monday because I was at basketball and I was watching the game as I was getting ready. We went to their gym and we beat them by 20 plus. It was close in the first half and then we just ran away with it. There's a big talk about, you know, they wanted to court storm that was, you know, close to that Wake Forest game. And then 3 weeks later, I think I've brought this up before, they were tied 75-75 with Louisville in the first round of the ACC tournament. Later on when they played Virginia, people got to go back and look at that. It was a wild finish. A guy in Virginia that hadn't missed two free throws in a game missed the second free throw, which was his second of the day, first time all year, which led to them not fouling, up three, and then a crazy three for them to win in overtime. And that's the ACC tournament. Then they get into this tournament. They're underdog every game. The only thing that makes sense, unless you have another thing, is that there's some sort of magic going on.
I think they play a very good playoff style of basketball. I think they control the pace. And specifically it really does kind of boil down to DJ Burns, who's controlling the points, the pace, the foul attention. Like, you just, attention to detail of fouls, he's torturing you. He put Kilipowski in foul trouble almost immediately. And it kind of went both ways for a little bit there, too. Both guys might have gotten in some foul trouble here. But I just think that he controlled this game, and you played every style that you guys attacked with was to DJ Burns' advantage. You didn't run. You didn't put him in defensive pick and rolls. You didn't do anything to him. You played his game the whole time, and he's going to beat you at his game. And I think teams keep falling into this trap, much like you just mentioned the journey that they're on, that they keep playing slow. I think you have a better shooting team in Duke. Like, do you agree? Like, I think they're better shooters on Duke's team than NC State, right? Like, that's, I don't think I'm saying anything.
Not just shooters, just talent across the board. Well, you know, definitely we're younger, but I would say specifically the shooting would say, yeah. And then, you know, DJ Burns, he's massive. He's a huge dude. There's not a lot of guys in college basketball that size.
It's nice seeing kind of post-up game all over again. I'll agree with that. I think everyone's a little tired of seeing Edie do it, and I don't think Burns is necessarily doing much different other than they just have completely different appearances. But watching their post games, it's really some great footwork. And Middlebrooks, and he's a real son of a bitch, I'll tell you that. That guy is a difference maker out there. I'm sure you were certainly not super pleased with his performance yesterday, but it just seems he's always getting a rebound or sticking it into somewhere he doesn't belong, and it just instigating some sort of momentum that benefits NC State. I don't really know what else to say other than I just think you should have taken more shots since you have better shooters and probably a better offense, but you didn't do that. And I don't know what urgency it was going to take to kind of wake this team up, but you're not going to win. You shouldn't win a playoff game essentially this late into the tournament, only scoring 64 points. And I don't even really think they got truly 64 points. I think there was a bit of a let up at the end here that they kind of cashed in a couple points. Really, this is a 50-point game. I mean, there were teams that had 50 points at halftime this tournament, like this week. So I don't know what else to say other than if you don't have an offense show up, you shouldn't beat any team. I know it seems a little different because this is NC State and it's in the ACC specifically, and then you lost to them in the ACC tournament, and there's a lot of history here. But really, you don't think you would have had the same result against another team? Like, you just didn't have a great game for
Duke. Oh, no. The first half was a rock fight and had so many opportunities. We had gone up by 9, and there were a few possessions afterwards where you score, and all of a sudden you got this to double digits, and you're just able to play, and they have to press, but they're able to make a little bit of a run at the end, and it's only a 6-point lead, and even a 6-point lead felt pretty good because we held them to 21 points, and one of those was a step back three that banked in, where it's like, all right, okay, we're ahead, you just got to keep doing this, and it seemed like exactly like you said, we went right into what they wanted to do, which was to play slow, and I was surprised because sometimes it's tough to force it, but it seemed like when they would score, we would not try to get the ball right away. It was like, it seemed like it was intentional of, okay, we're going to take our time getting the ball. We're going to take our time. Like, we're really trying to milk the clock and make this game have less possessions. But I would have thought we want more possessions. We're more likely. We want that variance of shots. So that was definitely frustrating.
I don't want to pile on here, but I just, it was some of the worst pressing I've ever seen. I mean, NC State just scores on like 5 possessions. And I know you're at a point of desperation.
That's the point of desperation at the end of the game. And that's where, I mean, that's why you don't see teams pressing anymore, because the talent level is at a level now that I think sometimes you can get away with it and you can scare some teams, but if the team isn't panicking, it's just, and that's the whole thing, is you're trying to speed them up and you're almost better off that they score right away because you need to, take your layup. We need to hit a 3. And by that point, I mean, it was a double digit and we extended the game another half an hour, but that the thing was over for a while.
I just, normally you do see somebody panic. You do see somebody miss a pass or a pass gets tipped or something, but it was DJ Burns and one, DJ Burns and one, DJ Burns dunk. Like, it was one after another. And I know you didn't really have much of a choice of what to do, but I haven't seen a team really clean up a press like that in that situation. I mean they realize that they have nothing to lose at this point, but at some point I think the pressure does revert a little bit back to them, that they're starting to get expectations, or at least even for themselves looking ahead. Like, they handle this incredibly coming into
I don't think so at all.
You didn't like the dancing and the singing?
No, that's what I'm saying, that they're super loose. I don't think that the pressure comes back to them. I don't think anyone's going in going, oh, yeah, well, now that you made the Final Four, now you have to go through the tallest guy, the former player of the year, probably to be 2-time player of the year, in Zach Edey. And I think, again, we're going to find out about that magic, but I don't think there's any sort of pressure. If they could have lost 2 rounds ago, and it would have been an amazing year for them. Like, this is like beyond found money at this point.
Coming into this game, there were some other ACC teams eligible. We had Clemson, UNC.
Hold on, I want to talk about a little more Duke before we move on. Just a little bit of a little cap on the season. I would say before the season started, if you told me lost in the Elite Eight, would have been disappointed. If you told me before the season started we lost to a double digit seed, would have assumed that was the first round and would have been a little bit panicky and been like, oh, the terrible year. But after that first month when we lost to Arizona at home, now I'm blanking on who else we lost at Arkansas. And even then we thought Arkansas was good, and turns out they weren't very good this year. But after those 2 losses in the first month, I would have said, I would have signed up for the Elite Eight pretty much throughout like the whole year. You know, after losing in the ACC tournament in the first round, it's like, I don't really know, losing to UNC twice. It's like, I kind of thought throughout the year, we were probably somewhere between the 4th and 8th best team in the country. But once you get that luck with Shed going down, and then you win, and then you realize, all right, we beat NC State before, they snuck up on us, but like, we're going to go in, we're a 6.5-point favorite, And then you think about it all Saturday, and now you start just in your head, like, we're at the Final Four. Well, I mean, once you get to the Final Four, you never know what's going to happen. So it's just so funny. Like, last week, just making it past Houston, I would have been thrilled. And then if we'd lost to Marquette, I think it just feels completely different. So,
well,
they just end. It always ends. It ends just very, very quickly. But I was happy to get that win on Friday night.
Well, part of this loss, I think, is a little bit of confirmation. The ACC was clearly one of the more dominant conferences. I mean, there was a scenario where Clemson, UNC, NC State, and Duke had an opportunity to advance. And I joked with you, like, do you think the ACC tournament was going to be harder to win than the actual tournament with its all ACC teams advancing? So
we had four in the Sweet 16, and then we had three in the Elite Eight. I mean, that's a lot. And I think it's almost turning into a joke at this time. And it's like, it's the backlash to the backlash that Ryan Russillo and Bill Simmons are always talking about, where I think I've, you know, stuck my chest out a little bit saying, hey, you know, check out the ACC. And it's not the ACC was the best conference, and you clearly can tell it now. It was just more of, I felt like we've been getting disrespected for a few years now. And just, again, in the tournament, there's been success. And I'm not saying we were the best conference. I don't think that's the case. But just, it shouldn't be an afterthought, and it shouldn't be a joke.
I think, if anything, what I'm saying is that Duke's journey was challenging. You still kind of held your head up high a little bit here. This is okay. You lost a team that's pretty good in a conference that's pretty good, pretty late in a tournament that's pretty good. So, like you said, I'm just happy to have rational Zach back in my life, because these past couple weeks with all of these games, it's impossible.
We were missing one of our rotation guys too, so that's got to be thrown out there.
Okay,
he's the one that beat Michigan State.
No, we're done talking about losing teams. No, we're moving on.
Caleb Foster. Let's talk about teams. He's the one that had a game against you guys. I don't know. It could have helped, especially where you got DJ Burns just whacking people in the face, and that's not reviewed or anything. Smacking our captain right in the face. He had to go out. His shots were short after that. I'm thinking he got hit in the eye and had trouble seeing the hoop. They did not call anything on DJ Burns. They let that guy run rampant. I think it's going to be interesting in the next game when he goes against Edie, because Edie gets away with some stuff. They're just big dudes. I don't think that it's a bias so much as just it's weird. It's like all the other guys are different sizes.
It is going to be a fun matchup, though, and it is at least going to be a matching style of play. Like, I don't think it was to Duke's benefit to watch somebody have to post up the whole game. Edie's going to post up the whole game, and Burns is going to post up this whole game, and it's going to really be a duel of how slow. Like, what do you think the max score of this is going to be? 66? 60? Like, what do we anticipate, like, the score? It's going to be a super slow-paced game. I thought Edie had a really impressive game through Purdue versus Tennessee. 39 minutes. I was most impressed with his endurance. I know the improvement certainly has been there with his footwork, and his shooting's better, and he's making free throws now. I thought
it's always impressive when you have a career high in a game like that. You know, he's a guy, he could easily have a career high against, you know, one of those opening cupcake matchups where college is different from the NBA. In college, you could still have quite the lead, and those starters stay in there. There's only so many games, and you really got to pad your stats to get you those awards and get you your eyeballs and get you to the next level. So for him to do it in a game like this that was, until the very end, very competitive, you know, they even went down in the first half with, like, 6 minutes to go. I think they were down 11, and then were able to make a run at the half. I had said, oh, I don't know, Purdue might be getting a little tight here, and they went the absolute opposite direction. Edie had, I think, recently shot his 400th free throw of the year. The record is 440. So that's within distance here that he might get it. It's a little deep, but he gets so many fouls every game.
I mean, I just didn't think he could play 39 minutes in that game and still have enough legs to have a kind of a huge block at the end. He airballs a free throw, and I think the next possession he has a huge block. I just was really impressed with his endurance. That connect was great, and that's about as all you could say about Tennessee.
Real aggressive, too. I like that. And then I think it was going into the second half or early in the second half, you had said, you know, game like this, who do you want? You want connect or you want Edie? And I was like, I think I want Edie. And then down the stretch, that exact block. That block was on Kinect. Kinect tried to take him off the dribble and left-hand finish, and Edie just absolutely rejected it. Wasn't even close. Well, what wasn't even close to a foul or either. Very clean block.
What was interesting in this game is, so Edie's got 40, Kinect's got 37. The score is 72-66. This is one man versus another man. Again, that's kind of it. It's funny how both teams know which guy the team wants to shoot and which guy is the main threat of the offense, and nobody's really able to do anything about it at all. I thought Purdue made just enough side plays with enough supporting cast just to edge this out and really take control towards the end. And I just thought Kinect almost looked more gassed than anyone else on the floor. And it was a hell of an option. I really liked that you said he was aggressive with it, because I thought he was settling a little bit more, waiting for the offense to come to him. And that's kind of all fine, but this was a game where I could see everyone else was tensing up, and he was really the only one who looked like he was ready to have the ball and take a shot, and he just kept doing it. If anyone else on his team has any heat check at all, like 1-3 here or there, this game might go differently. But overall, it'll be fun watching Edie against Burns. I'm assuming they're both going to play a ton of minutes. Let's just say that. All right, so who do you think is going to score more points, Edie or Burns?
Edie.
You got a number?
26. I think it's going to be slower paced.
Yeah, I still think even if it's slower paced, he's still getting 30. Like, I have a hard time thinking he doesn't. Either way, these numbers, as impressive as they are, they're nothing to what UConn did to Illinois. Nothing. Like, nothing that we saw this whole tournament is remotely close to what UConn did to Illinois. At halftime, I said to you, if Illinois kind of blows this, we're going to regret this. This was the most vulnerable UConn's ever been. They're up, single digits at halftime with 6-8 points, something something manageable.
I think
something,
it was only 3. I think it was 23-26.
I don't know. It all changed so fast, so quickly. In a blink of an eye, a 30-0 run, UConn advantage, which is a dominance that you just never really see. I mean, it's one to be up by 30 points. It's another to just score 30 in a row and nobody else scores. I mean, the advantage that the offense has, the offense knows where it's going. The defense doesn't know anything about that. There's still an offensive advantage even when you're getting your ass kicked. And the fact you're not able to put together one point, it's just an incredible
dominance.
How do
you not get fouled?
And
you know,
something.
Go to the free throw line. Something goofy happens and Klingon blocks it, but it goes right to another guy that's able to, a garbage layup. Just, it takes a while to score 30 points. And just over and over again. And it was unfortunate. The coach going into halftime, they asked him about it and said, we're gonna kind of keep taking it to Klingon, and if he blocks 100 shots, he blocks 100 shots. And I mean, that was obviously hyperbole, but that's kind of what happened. Is Edie and Klingon are similar, where they don't even have to block the shot; they're just existing. They're there and they're impacting what guys are doing.
It was the most impressive thing I think I've seen in the tournament, possibly ever. Because I'm really kind of respecting Illinois as well. Like, this isn't a first-round matchup. I mean, you talked about that with the numbers of the other guys. This isn't like Duke lost in the first round. This is late in the tournament. This is a real game against a real team.
This is to go to the Final Four.
Both of the teams that are here had to go through whatever they had to go through to get here, and that's a challenge that it's not easy to get done. And to do this to a team of that caliber, I'm so impressed by it, because it looked like for a second there that they were having a bad game, and they really were. And then the on switch just hit, and it was like, no, that's right. We win by a lot. I am a little fascinated to see how they would handle a close game. They've had so many blowouts that the closest they've had is this halftime pressure. And that's nothing. That's you put a 30-0 run at the end of this, that's really nothing.
Between last year and this year, so it's 10 games now. The walk-ons have played every game. Hurley's son is on the team. Andrew Hurley has played in every tournament game. That is just crazy. I think that I don't remember how often they're going to be in a Final Four. And I saw the list, and it's a short list of Final Four or championship games that are double-digit spreads. And it seems like every time the bookmakers make the line, they beat it 10 times in a row. This is a little different from the NC State run, but that doesn't happen. hasn't happened that you beat the spread in these tournament games 10 times in a row. And I think it's something crazy. Like they've beaten the spread on average of 13 points. You're telling me that the bookmakers are off by 13 points?
Man, I really like some of the other teams too. I'm normally so critical of, like, you know, college basketball, amateur basketball. It's not that good. And sometimes there's just a team that just has maybe a player or a couple players that are like, wow, like you just, you know, an Edie or just a size or a talent like Connect or something that just nobody else, everyone else in the league wishes they had that. The dominance of UConn is just such a universal team thing that I don't, like, are they going to lose at all? Like, I don't think they're going to lose a game. I don't think that anyone's going to get within single digits of them. I think they're going to win by at least 10 in every game going forward. And that there's kind of no scenario I can imagine right now where UConn doesn't win at all. And that the best that we can hope for is that maybe it's a close game. Like that's really where I'm at.
The only thing I can think is Purdue, if they're able to beat the Magic, maybe they can steal the Magic from NC State, as well as Edie is just very unique. And I don't think Klingon has had to go against somebody of like a similar, you know, similar skill and build. And I don't know if that'll just throw you off. If you're used to a guy's being, you know, a hedge shorter than you, a little bit lighter, and now this guy is different. But I don't know how you can pick against UConn right now. They're just an absolute wagon.
I think UConn's offense would pick on Purdue in so many different ways with Edie out there. I think they would make Edie have to move and get around, and he's going to be trying to close out guys that I don't think he's had to do. Because there's a movement on the offense that's just everyone's somewhere, and there's back doors, and there's a lot of communication that has to happen. I'm not saying that it would be easy. I just think some of the advantages that Edie has would also be used against him, and that UConn is the team to really take care of that vulnerability. Like, that's just what they're doing with everyone else. All right, I hate it. I hate it all. We got to move on. All right, Alabama-Clemson might have been the best game we saw. This Clemson had some magic, man. All right, I don't know how they kept doing it, especially because they did it all on like post-ups and fadeaway, you know, high post shots. And Alabama's doing it on shooting threes from 45% for the game. I don't know how Clemson held on to this for as long as they did, but it seemed like they had a chance, and Bama just kept hitting these threes, man. Those two in the corner, that one from the logo, just daggers. But this was a fun game. Again, another successful ACC run, I would say. Like, the fact that Clemson was even in this game, I mean, I think they were like the universal cross-off I heard of the first round. Like, just, I can't believe they are where they are.
I think they were a very popular upset pick.
But I think you were a little bit more of a fan of Bama maybe this year than I was, yeah, especially the offense. How good is this offense? Like, do they stand a chance at all against UConn? Like, can they just get hot?
I'm saying this, and I'm only half joking. I think that they should only shoot threes. Just make Klingon be bored underneath the hoop and just hope you have one of those variance games. This isn't the NBA. You don't have to win four of these games. You have to win one. And for sure, there's a chance you get blown out by 30 points, and probably a better chance you're going to get blown out by 30 points doing this strategy than winning. But you only need to win one. And I think this might be the only way, because their defense is atrocious. They do not guard anybody. But I think they're hoping is that if they can get up and down and maybe get UConn running a little bit. But, I mean, there's a reason that they're a double-digit underdog in this.
I think that was the sad part about watching this game. It was good, but then I feel like I was haunted by what UConn did. That I watched every other team after just knowing that at some point they might have to face that team. And as good of a game as this has been, and as much talent as I've seen, I don't see anyone who stands a chance. And then that was like haunting me. It's still haunting me. I hope it happens.
It's like
I'll be rooting for it.
It's a huge big bad at the end where, oh, yeah, you're playing pretty well. Yeah, you beat this team. They're decent. Just knowing, well, do you know what's at the end of this road? It's a monster. It's enormous. It's got a big hammer, and it's just smacking people on the head every day.
It's great. All right, anything else for college here? Otherwise, we're going to talk some other, I suppose, women's tournaments, and maybe how about the NCAA trying to ban these player prop bets? What's the deal about that? Is that specifically men's and women's?
Let me give you a breakdown of our standings. I am in the lead in every league. But the problem is, like we mentioned it last week, you picked UConn in every league. I have no idea how it's possible, but I ran the projector or the projections, and I think it's because I picked UConn to the championship game in the ESPN league that even if they win, I have accumulated points. But in the Yahoo leagues, I am pretty much done with my points. I don't think I can get any more points. I had picked Duke and I picked Houston in the different ones. So if UConn wins, then you will win. But
it's going to be close. I'm not entirely, I looked the other day and it was like, I'm still down by a whole lot. And you having UConn in the finals, I thought was a real backbreaker. Cause it was like, I have one opportunity to get points on you. And if you have those points for them in the finals, And I only have them winning, and you're still up. Like, I don't know how I make up that gap. Maybe I'm wrong.
That was only in ESPN. In Yahoo, I had Auburn going, and I am out of points. And so I need UConn to lose. But this is exactly why I didn't pick UConn, because I wanted this exact scenario that I didn't want any sort of in the back of my head. It's like, well, I come in the bracket if UConn won this. It's like, nope, I'm riding all the way with anti-UConn bias that I have, and I might just like last year, be riding it right into the ground very hard.
And I just tried to fill out a perfect bracket. I figured that would beat you. You know, I didn't have to overthink it other than that, right? Like, what do you mean?
That's a smart way of doing it, but there's so much craziness this year that I thought it would be impossible to go perfect this year.
It feels pretty crazy to pick anyone but UConn at this point. All right, that wasn't the craziest thing I actually saw this weekend. The craziest thing I saw this weekend was the women's basketball tournament that had two different three-point line distances on each half of the court that were visually noticeable. It wasn't kind of like, well, you know, if you kind of look at them close, like maybe it's not that off. Now, I do understand that they do alternate in quarters in women's, right? Or is it just the half? I assume they do it in quarters. So either way, you are going to have a little bit of time on that side and the other side.
They play quarters, but they do not switch like football. They still switch like the NBA, that it's quarters, but you switch at the half, the direction.
Either way, you are having a half on one court and a half on another. How much of a mess is this? Is this really that unfair of an advantage? Like an advantage, or is this who screwed this up for one? Like, how do we get to where we're at? This is an actual tournament game. The amount of money being made on this game in one is it's just crazy. It's pretty embarrassing, right? Like, how did we get here?
Human error is to blame. I guess they set up and you drill a hole that is right underneath the hoop, and that hole was off to do the 3-point line. I just it's kind of one of the, you had one job, like you had to get the lines right, and it was off by 9.5 inches. So, or I guess nine inches. So not quite a foot. A good chunk, definitely noticeable on TV. And do you think that they should have waited to get it fixed, or do you think, are you a fan of, hey, we got to play both ways, you know, one way in the first half, one way in the second half, we'll just deal with it?
I do you really think they had the time to wait and do it? Like, was that an option? I feel like they were pressured into that not really being an option.
I saw the video where they had looked like game ops people coming out with a tape measure to look and see, oh yeah, no, this is incorrect, which does not surprise me. I mean, you hear about it, I think, more in the NBA, where these guys have been playing longer and it's their job professionally, and he's saying, like, hoops off by half an inch. And, all right, measure it. Oh, yep, sure enough, yep, it's off, or something, you know, the ball is weird. Like, they know all of the things, but you got to get this right. I mean, this is just embarrassing. And I heard that the officials did go to the coaches and say, do you want to play or do you want to wait? I mean, it would have taken forever. And I mean, there's fans in the stands, so I think they probably felt the pressure of, well, we're either playing with the broken court and fans now, or we're going to play in 3 hours at, you know, the next game's going to be at 2 a.m. and there's going to be no fans here. But it shouldn't have been something that they had to do. This is deep in the tournament. The tournament in general, I just can't imagine this happening at the men's side. Like, it would be crazy.
It's pretty wild. I mean, could you imagine an NBA game if a 3-point line was closer on one side? Like, just how much of an advantage that would be. I mean, I think back to,
I think,
like,
yeah, I think in the NBA, I wonder if for college, if it's not an advantage being closer.
Oh, the spacing's worse.
No, not even so much the spacing being worse, just you shoot at a certain distance, and now you've moved up 9 inches, and you're just, your touch is off. You got enough to worry about and who's guarding you, and especially the way the league is now, like, you're shooting threes. No one's shooting those KG one step, 2 steps in from the three-point line. So, I don't know.
It's the wildest thing I've seen for a game that really mattered, too. Like, not a expedition, not a – I mean, I don't want to disqualify a regular season game, but a tournament game. Yeah, I don't know. The women's tournament's going to go on tonight.
News.
The big game's tonight, right? The LSU-Iowa?
Yeah, so Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark, that's in Albany. This is in Portland, so they did fix it. Once they found the error, they played the game. But today, when UConn plays USC, so then you have Paige versus Juju, the three-point lines will be accurate.
Well, I hope so. Or maybe we should do this more often. Maybe we should just like flip a coin for who wants the wacky side first. Is this a good idea? Should we propose this for a rule change?
I think that we should not. That sounds very gimmicky, and this is not the All-Star game. This is real basketball. People are actually watching this. We should keep it as actual competition.
What about the big three? We could play around with some stuff in that one, right? That's a fun
league.
When
was the last time you watched a big three game?
It's on in the summer.
Did you watch last summer?
I'll watch every now and then. I'm not really paying attention to it, but it's on in the background.
I watched it initially the first couple of years, not religiously, but like you said, it's on in the summer. But definitely last year, and it might even be 2 years. I don't know when it's on, and it has not grabbed my attention like it did initially.
Would it with Caitlin Clark on the screen, maybe, in her offseason?
I saw that Ice Cube offered her $5 million, which is much more than she's going to make, at least from her salary in the WNBA. I think no. I don't think it has to do with her specifically, because I think watching her play is exciting. I think it's got a Steph Curry element to it. I think it's just the style of play, that the three-on-three, it's these older ex-NBA guys, and there's a lot more DJ Burns in the post, and I don't think it would be fun to watch some of these older guys just back down Caitlin Clark in the post. But I think watching her on offense shoot threes, I think that's always going to be fun. But I wonder how much of it was this is an actual offer, and how much of this was just more of a joke to kind of get attention for the big three off of Caitlin Clark's image.
Well, I suppose in theory that, you know, it's the off season of the WNBA, from my understanding. Like, it wouldn't really interfere with it, right? Like, it's not this or that; it's both. I suppose the scarier part is, could you imagine her getting hurt in the big three and her not being ready for her professional contract job, and be like, "Well, what'd you do the off season?" Like, oh, took an elbow from like Zach Randolph or some like monster, you know, '90s player,
initially I was thinking, oh, there's probably something in their WNBA contract that says you can't play other professional, you know, basketball players for sure. You know, you can't ride motorcycles. You know, there's all sorts of stipulations in there. But now that you mention it, they're not playing in Russia anymore because of geopolitical implications. But for a while, that's where they were going to play, because that's where they were actually making money. And I think a lot of them still play somewhere internationally. So I don't think that would actually be an issue if she wanted to do that.
It'd be a pretty easy $5 million.
It seems that way, right? They only play once a week. Three on three, the games are pretty quick.
And yes, she's playing against retired. She's playing against retired athletes, and she's in her prime. I'm not saying like there still isn't a size variance, and I'm sure she still have to adjust to playing with a men's ball. But I don't think that would be as much of an adjustment for somebody who's as good as she is. Like, I think she's pretty good. Scored a lot of points.
A lot of points.
All right, let's move on to some NBA, where we have some questionable ownership strategies going on. We have Javante Porter betting scandal. How about we start with that, where Porter essentially doesn't really even play. He's a role player on a bad team that's trying to lose games. And essentially the scandal, from my understanding, was there was a massive bet on all of his unders, and he kind of took himself out of the game. And I think it's just weird that you were to filter all the bets and just see the amount of money being put on this and be like, why is there so much money on this? And I guess that's the real red flag here. I don't know whether this is stupid, a coincidence, or like just too much. There's too much bullshit around all this for something not to have been fishy, right? Like, it's something went wrong here. Is this happening more often, or is this was just really poorly executed to the point like we don't really need to worry about this? Like, this is another moron that just used his own name for the email or something. Like, it's I don't know really how else to look at this. He's not that relevant of a player for one, but maybe those are the players we need to worry about even more. What are you thinking about this?
This guy's done in the NBA. He's done. I think they're going to come down very hard. I think it would be naive to think that none of this is happening anywhere in all of the sports, with it being so prevalent, so easy to do. But you can, especially if you're not walking, or most people aren't walking into a casino anymore, you know, with cash, changing it into chips, sports betting. You're just doing it right on your phone. You don't necessarily think about it, but they have all of your information. All of your information. They know exactly how much you're betting, what you're betting on. And it wasn't so much that there was a higher than normal amount on Jontay Porter's unders. It was the most amount bet on any of the player props that day. So this is you're committing fraud. And you are just being very obvious about it. They're doing the story is almost a week old. I think this came out right after we did the podcast last week. I'm surprised that it hasn't come out yet. I'm wondering if the only reason there hasn't been is they're doing their absolute most due diligence, because I do think they're going to come down hard on this guy as a signal to anybody else that's messing around with this. We will not tolerate this. And even if they just really hit him with, you know, you're banned for a year, you're banned for 2 years, who wants this guy on their team? You care more about helping your buddies make like a little money on the side than your actual professional career? It's not like you bet the over. You bet the under and then took yourself out. Said, I'm not going to play tonight. It's not like this guy's a fringe guy. He has to be doing everything. You know what these guys are doing at that point? You got other guys that are doing every possible thing. Not going out partying, going into practice early, staying late, studying, doing everything. And then he does this. If there's like an equal, should we get Jontay Porter? We should get this other guy. You're going with the other guy. So that hammer is going to be coming down awfully hard from Mr. Silver at some point soon.
Do you think that we should be allowed to make prop bets on a player that's a lot less relevant? Like, is it just playing?
Yes.
Like why is this an option? Should this not be an option?
Yes. I think it should be an option. I think it's because the sports books, they are the ones that are making they make the lines. And I've dabbled with individual prop bets, and some of the players are not available. It's not like they have something for every single one. That's why I was actually kind of surprised that a guy on this fringe level, I mean, I think the over-under was, in my head, it's like 3.5 points. Maybe that was his, maybe that was like rebounds or something. But I think at most it was 6.5. And if the bookmakers want to put the odds out, they have all of the math. They have all of the advantage. All of the advantage. And so they know what to put. And that's why they know when somebody wins big, that especially maybe multiple people win big, and something's not quite right here. This is not how the money should have came in. So if they don't want to offer it, then they won't.
So Zach's advice for all this is to bet smaller amounts. They won't notice it. Don't go all in on one. You got a whole season of games, 80 plus. Right? Just take it.
I'm not endorsing fraud. But it just seems like you are being so so brazen about this. It just makes it like you clearly don't know what's going on.
This felt like doing some illegal crime on the internet that someone was like, "Wait a minute, I can just see you. Like, you're not hiding. Like, this is we see all of the evidence of everything. There's a whole paper trail of everything that happened here."
It's, you know, if you go to Walmart and you walk out with, you know, a candy bar in your pocket, you could probably do that several times. And you're real, you know, you just look about it. This is like you backed up a box truck, and then you just started walking out with items. And like you said, we can see you. Like, we have all of your information. You're the only one putting 10 grand on Jontay Porter unders. Like, the next highest was, you know, $500, and we thought that one was a lot.
I suppose my proposal of getting rid of this was to protect the gamblers, but maybe you're right where this should be punishing them to agree of, like, well, if you're risky or silly enough or honestly dumb enough to bet on this, as well as if you're dumb enough to fall into the trap of this and be like, holy crap, our buddy Jontay, we could make a ton of money on him tonight. All we got to have him do is walk out. And that's the massive red flag that just gets him caught. It's like, all right, we need to have these bets to kind of find these guys. Otherwise, I don't know how else we would have found him. So maybe we should allow him.
Yeah.
Maybe that is the answer.
I just think it's awfully interesting in the past two-ish weeks. I mean, I think it was even a little closer. It was kind of like within 1 week. We're just talking about it later because when the news dropped, two pretty massive sports betting scandals. And we really haven't had one in a while. And it was just legalized a couple of weeks ago in North Carolina. So it just kind of continues. And just wondering what happens as we continue to do this. I think we mentioned it a little bit last week, and, you know, mentioned it again, that it's every podcast. It's every podcast. It's almost every commercial break. It's FanDuel. It's DraftKings. It's the local ones. It's Prize Picks. And it's multiple times. It just really, I feel like in the past month or two, I've eased off. I've eased off a ton where it's just, they're hammering it so much. And it's just like, well, where are they getting all this money for advertising? And just like, I feel like a dummy continuing to play into it, where it's like, well, wait a minute. Like, obviously I know, they're the house always wins, but it's like, all right, well, no, if I do this in a, you know, a specific way and I'm following certain people and I can see what their record is and how they've gambled previously. So it's like, all right, I'm thinking I'm finding an edge, but it's just, there's a reason. There's a reason that they keep building new casinos.
This is going to be the new AA of it's Gambling Anonymous is going to take over everything. No one else is going to have any other problems other than their gambling problems. This is going to be, like, this is gonna be like cigarettes from years ago. Like, they'll hopefully figure it all out, but we're gonna have some pretty rough stories similar to these. They're gonna get a lot worse than this. I think we're actually pretty lucky that it is just Jontay Porter on a team that isn't in the playoffs, that is trying to lose, and for a player that doesn't actually play, that nobody's really even heard of. Like, it's much better that it is that guy, right? Like, it's Ohtani is the name attached to all this, but it is a little suspicious of a story. And perhaps hearing every side of it in different language translations makes it even more complicated. But I don't think it's Ohtani directly involved as much as that story really is. Like, it's just a name associated with it. It's a really close association, so I understand the reason of concern. But I don't think he was truly doing anything. I don't think he violated anything. I think,
yeah, it's like if he's betting on basketball and, I don't know, might even be Asian sports that we don't even really know about, and it's really more of slightly embarrassing. Like, oh yeah, lost $4.5 million. That gets out. Like, that's not going to look, you know, great. So that's kind of on, but that's kind of on the best case scenario for that story. So that's never good if that's the best case.
I my understanding of it is, you know, the fact that they go back and forth with was it stolen, was it not stolen, that it was stolen, you know, I'm still not entirely sure of all that. But what I originally understood it as was he was essentially covering $1 million, couple bets to clean up someone else's slate because they were asking him for help. And when you make, I mean, what did he just sign a contract for? Like $1 billion or something? Like, he's
crazy, you know, crazy money. But that was deferred, so
I know. All right. I'm not saying going to him asking for $4.5 million is like asking for $45 from someone else, but in some crazy way, it kind of is when you have it like that, you know? Like,
yeah. The magnitude is different from a regular person. Yeah. So, you know, regular people, you hear $4.5 million and it's, you know, mind blowing, but when you make that kind of money, if you're looking to get that same sort of rush of trying to win, you gamble more money. I mean, it's same with, you know, Charles Barkley or Michael Jordan. It's like, well, they're gambling more money because they have more money.
All right, let's talk a little NFL and specifically some rule changes. We are banning the hip drop tackle, the hip drop tackle. And what I'm learning a little bit more about this more recently is that there are going to be fining players for this for the missed calls as well. So I think it's going to be weird for the first couple of weeks. There's going to be a huge game that someone's going to get screwed on because they call this and it advances another team into field goal range and then they lose. But if, say if they don't call it or if they miss it, that player is still could still get fined when they go back and watch the film whatever days later. I didn't know that. Did you know that?
I did not. I knew that there was going to be fines. I didn't realize that they would be reviewing the tapes, and even if it wasn't called on the field, that it would be called, or you could still be fined.
They want this gone, and I think what's worse than telling everyone that they want it gone is that they didn't really offer us an alternative, which I mean, you played football. I've never done tackle drills. I don't really know how you're supposed to do it, and now it's, all right, don't hit over here. Don't do this. If the guy gets by you, you kind of got to keep let him go. Like, what are you supposed to do? Like, it seems like they've really, really upticked the offense in this one, and that this is like, all right, defense, just go out there and try to grab flags, and it don't hurt anyone. Like, what are we supposed to do?
I think the real problem is that you just mentioned, I played football. You and I were watching Red Zone every week. I'm not exactly sure what a swivel hip drop tackle is. And if we know one thing about the NFL, they don't have the best of this is one thing, this is the other thing. And I just think this is going to be a mess. And from game to game, referee to referee, was that a hip drop? Well, he didn't swivel, so no, that one's going to be okay. But then you're going to have the other one, and it's going to be similar to the sacking the quarterback and putting your weight on him. Of, well, did you try your hardest to catch yourself? I don't know. I don't think you did. All right, that's a penalty. It's an automatic first down. Now, what would have been, you know, third, you know, leading to fourth. Now there's a first down for the offense, and they continue. I think it's going to be a mess. And they do this, and they say under the guise of, I shouldn't say the guise, but they say this is going to help with player safety. All right, well, that's good. I wouldn't want to be against player safety, but we're going to play two games on Wednesday because it's Christmas. No, don't worry. We did research during COVID. This is fine. But no more swivel hip drop tackles. But yeah, you can play on 4 days rest, no problem.
I'm all for the improvement of the game and improvement on player safety, but I think you can't take the physicality out of football, right? Like there has to be. There's risk in this sport. I don't think you're ever going to get to the point where you've lowered the risk so much that nobody's ever going to get hurt. I have no idea what the percentages are of like how much safer they think this really changes, but obviously there's some sort of number that tells them that there's enough that they're going to find somebody, even in a missed call, for doing this, that they think that the injury risk is that much. So I agree it's going to be a mess, but maybe the safety is a real thing. Like, this is obviously a risk that they're willing to go forward with and make a change. And I hope that adds up.
I think the better solution to this, but this requires a lot more money, is guaranteed contracts. I mean, look at the NBA. The NBA, there's contact. It's contact sport. It's not a collision sport like football, but guys still get hurt. Still happens. And people are still going to get hurt in football, but rather than, like you said, try to legislating out all of these little things that I just think are just going to be so hard, both to referee and to watch, and I think it's just going to be frustrating, is guarantee the contracts. That way, if the guy in this collision sport does get hurt, it's still bad because you want to be playing. There's all the rehab. It physically hurts, but at least it's not also a financial hurt.
It's going to be weird. I think this is actually going to be a huge change. I think this is going to be like Steph Curry shooting threes in the NBA and everyone suddenly realizing three is more than two. I think we're going to see an offensive explosion on this. I think you're going to see defenses struggle so much to the point where even bad teams, if they could just get somebody on their side, I think they're going to have less chances. I don't know what they're going to be training people how to tackle. Like, maybe there's some creative way they're going to come up with something new. But to my understanding, it's kind of like if you're running side by side with someone, you don't really have a good way to take him down without going with his momentum, which isn't to your advantage. This guy's trying to run that way. You're trying to get him to run the other way. And you're saying, I can't basically reverse him. I have to go with him. Like, that's how is that?
I think it's going to be incredibly hard because, you know, I'm not an NFL player, but when you're out there and it's moving fast and it moves way faster than you think it does when you watch on TV, because you're not panned out. You know, it's like when you're driving in a car, if you look at like the line right next to you, it's going really fast. But if you like look at the mountain over to the side in the distance, it's moving much slower. And I don't think it's even on purpose. You're not trying to hurt anybody. It's just, my job is to get this guy on the ground by any means necessary. And just, you just try to do it. And I think that we're going to be complaining about this throughout the season. I don't think this is going to be one of those rule changes that happens. And as we go through, it's either, hey, you know what? I didn't even notice that we're missing this. Or, hey, you know what? I like this rule change. I think it's just going to be constantly like, oh, this game was decided again by this time because of a swivel hip drop tackle, or because one wasn't called.
This wasn't the only rule change that's happening. The NFL also changed the kickoff rule, where they're going to be lining up, 15 yards apart from each other at, I want to say it's a 35 and like 25 yard line or something like that. I don't know the actual numbers, but it isn't going to be your standard. Everyone gets a running start, crashes into each other. The kicker will still be kicking from the same distance, and the receiver can obviously still be as far back as he wants, but likely to be in the end zone. I don't know if this makes special teams more relevant or less relevant. I'm all for changing it because it seems like a lot of people get hurt on this specific play, and yet it doesn't really ever deliver anything exciting. It just seems like a whole bunch of contact of a play that could easily be a commercial break, to be honest with you. So if this adds safety and maybe adds a little bit more excitement, like, do we see more run backs or less run backs with this? Because I am all for a little momentum of seeing some real special team scores, because I think that's really exciting when it does happen. I don't want it happening so frequently that it's like expected by certain teams, but I feel like it really doesn't happen at all anymore. So if this is anything at all to enhance that possibly happening more, I guess I'm for it. But really, I think it boils down to, this isn't that important of a play. And if it ends up still not being that important, I don't think it's as much of a change. I don't know. The other thing with all this is, college isn't making these changes. And I've already been really anti-college, but if these are sort of rules right now that make me look at college and be like, wait a minute, so they're going to play like old school football? That sounds way more appealing than what is this new hippie football? Like, what is this? They like got pillows on each other and they're like tucking each other in to put them down. Like, I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there that, you know, I normally all for the rule changes, especially if it's something that seems like it could actually be an improvement and doesn't really change the game too much. But this hip drop tackle might be the one where it's like, maybe I do like college football all of a sudden. Maybe I am a little bit more into this. You know, we're letting guys hit guys. You only need 1 foot in. The officiating seems way faster, and the rules are the rules. The NFL changing rules, like two of these in one season already, seems like a lot. And I don't know, maybe I just like things kind of staying football being football, and that's kind of my take on college. But I don't, do you like these? Like, are you cool with the kickoff? Like, do you think it's that much of a change?
The tackle is something that the casual watcher, you know, won't pick up on right away. This kickoff, you're going to notice immediately. You think of the traditional, like you said, and especially going from Saturday to Sunday, where you're kicking off and there's a whole line of guys with the kicker. Boom, you kick it off. Everybody runs down. There's kick return. Now it's going to be, there's the kicker is going to be all by his lonesome and everybody else is lined up. So when you're looking at it on your TV, like left to right, it's going to be the kicker's on the left. Everybody else is on the right. There's different rules for if it goes in the end zone in the air versus if it goes past the, or it lands in the 20 in the air, that, you know, we're all going to have to learn on how that works. It's interesting because this was an XFL rule that then the XFL, the UFL, I don't know, all the spring leagues merged together. They're not even doing this rule anymore. So I makes me kind of wonder, like, hey, why'd you guys have this? And then when you combined, you would think you'd take the best things of all of your leagues, but you said, nope, we don't want to do this. The idea is that it's supposed to increase returns. And that would be nice because it's been, I don't know, every year for the past, I don't know if it was 10, 15, 20 years, the amount of returns have been dwindling down, down, down. And it could be, you know, more exciting if there is some returns. So I'm willing to, I think it's a radical change, but I'm willing to hold out judgment until I see it and see, does this actually increase returns, makes the game more exciting? I don't like so much that these rule changes are coming out after free agency has already happened. They've already, the draft hasn't happened yet, but it, you know, special teams isn't as important as offense and defense, but it's still part, it's still a big part of the game. And I think that certain guys are going to become more valuable and other guys are going to become less valuable. And it's almost, it almost seems like week two of fantasy deciding, hey, actually, we're going to score it differently. It's like, well, that would have been good to know 3 weeks ago when we drafted, because then I wouldn't have drafted this guy, or would have drafted this guy higher.
I do agree, especially your drafting rankings of, all right, well, this guy will be utility. You know, he'll do special teams. Maybe he'll take a punt, and then suddenly kickoff returns become, you know, worth something. It's like, well, no, that guy does this. This guy doesn't. Never did that in college. We thought they'd both be utility guys. We didn't really care. But now this guy's skill set is, you know, as you said, a completely different value of what we're grading it all. I do think that there's going to be a difference now with these, the college transition into the pros with these rules. It's going to be a learning curve. I mean, it's going to be a learning curve for everyone this year. But I think, you know, going forward, you know, how are you going to judge somebody who's a good tackle in college going forward to a good tackle in NFL? It's like, yeah, he had like 15 hip drop tackles in the whole season over there. Like, this guy's good for college, but he's not going to be able to make any money in the NFL. He's going to be fined.
They're going to be fining him left and right.
It's a big change. And I for a sport that makes so much money, I think they're getting a little too loosey-goosey with how much control they have and how much play they can really get away with. And then the reality is we're all going to still tune in and watch. But I think this is one where I don't think this is going to make more people watch. I think this is going to certainly turn people off more. And maybe I'll be wrong, where the controversy just continually builds and that's exactly what they want, where they just stay in the headlines for making a rule that's just going to be talked about every week for some sort of game. It's evil advertising. It's really what it is.
I think that what you mentioned is that they're just printing money at this point. They said, oh, when it's not in the normal times, we're not going to play games on Christmas just because they're on Christmas. Don't worry, NBA. Wrong. Tricked you there. They're going to do whatever they can to make money. And we're all addicted to it. We're all playing fantasy. We're all gambling. More and more people are gambling on it. It's all Sunday. It's easy to remember when the days are. And they got us. Yeah. And I think at this point, no one's going to walk away.
Do you think the NFL looked into options of just making Christmas the fourth Thursday of every December? Like, do they think they looked into maybe making that the permanent change than anything they did this year?
Just make Christmas every Sunday.
Yeah.
Make Christmas be a Sunday every year.
Yeah.
I wouldn't doubt it. They're pretty powerful.
Well, maybe next year. Maybe our whole religion's going to get changed across this country. It's just going to be bow down to football. We're starting class a little different. Session starts before football or whatever. All right, let's get out of here. We got a crazy McDonald's thing you're going to talk about on the way out here. What's going on with McDonald's and their new partnership with a donut company that you've heard of?
Yes. McDonald's and Krispy Kreme joining forces. You will be able to go in the near future to McDonald's and get Krispy Kreme donuts. I thought that was pretty unique. It's about one of the most American things you can think of right behind the NFL, right?
Donuts? Yeah. I mean, I kind of...
No,
always...
I mean, McDonald's that sells fast food is now going to also have donuts available for you. So you could be able to get a McGriddle and a Krispy Kreme donut. Like, to be you can't even be close to being healthy.
I don't think either of us are coffee people, but I think that's the idea. Is McDonald's has, I think, become a little bit more of a breakfast destination than I think even they ever expected. And why not? Krispy Kreme? I mean, it's easier than dealing with the milkshake machine that's always broken anyway. So let's just sell donuts for sweets. That's way easier. And established brand? I don't need to make my own. You know, I don't need to do anything crazy or do anything else. Let's just add these guys, tag them on. So that's... it's interesting. Is it weird that I'm more likely to go to McDonald's for Krispy Kreme than McDonald's? Like, is that a weird scenario now? Because I am a little bit more excited for that.
No, that's what I'm saying. I think it's a great partnership, because I think everybody knows the Krispy Kreme brand name, but I don't think that, or I guess I'm pretty confident that there are not nearly as many Krispy Kreme stores as there are McDonald's. So, do I really want to drive, 2 hours to get Krispy Kreme? No, not really. But there's a McDonald's on every block, so just to swing by there and you get Krispy Kreme donuts, and then while you're there, it's like, oh, well, let me get something else. You know, it's not just getting a donut. Now I'm getting the coffee too. So I think it's going to help both of them out really well.
All right, you got 30 seconds.
It's not going to help out obesity in America, but I think it'll help the company's bottom lines.
You got 30 seconds. Quick question here. You're a big fan of the Big E. They do some ridiculous sandwiches over there. One of them is the burger with donuts for buns. Is this a new off-menu thing for McDonald's? You can now get this all year. Don't need to wait for the Big E or the fair food.
People are definitely going to do it. That will for sure happen.
That's going to be like a new TikTok trend, right? Like, we could totally call that. Like, that's
already... Oh, big time.
Yeah. All right.
Big time.
All right. Well, we'll be back next week. Thank you, as always, for listening. Subscribe, Little Column A, Little Column B podcast. We're on Spotify, YouTube, our Facebook page. And you can follow Zach on his X and Twitter account, which is...
WickedZman24.
Best of luck to all the teams. We'll have a champion next week. We'll be back on Monday. Little column A, little column B.